This is Music Inside Out. I'm Gwen Tompkins. Can one song change your life? Dr. Michael White says yes. He was 17 years old. He bought a record. He went home. He put it on the turntable, dropped the needle, and this is what he heard.
The bayou, the river, being around the French Quarter, going to fish fries and penny parties, having people sit out on their stoop, learning your news from them, going to local restaurants and meeting strangers, all of those things that are very unique about the city. It seems like all of those things were in the music.
If you want to know what song that was, stay tuned. Traditional New Orleans jazz man Dr. Michael White and his great big clarinet. After the break. This is Gwen Tompkins, and the great jazz clarinetist, Dr. Michael White, is with us this week on Music Inside Out. Dr. White was long a staple at the Village Vanguard in New York, playing the New Year's Eve celebration. 17 New Year's Eves, to be exact. He's also a frequent collaborator with the Lincoln Center Jazz Orchestra, and an esteemed bandleader in his own right. Michael White has made armfuls of recordings and teaches at Xavier University here in New Orleans. We've stolen him away from school and ensconced him at Elephant Quilt Studios in New Orleans. But before we go any further, let's finish this dance. That was very nice.
It was.
Over the Waves is one of my all-time favorite traditional jazz songs. I don't know exactly why, but I think it has to do with the fact that I love the ones that start off slowly and then get real hot. So that starts off as a waltz, right?
Yes, that's correct. 3/4 time, and then it picks up, starts to swing in 4/4 time.
And what album does that appear on?
Well, let's see. A lot of jazz musicians have recorded it, but we did it on a CD entitled A Song for George Lewis on the Basin Street record label.
Oh, boy. We're going to talk about George Lewis in a bit. But before we go any further, I do want to clear up a matter. Now, if I were to fall down, with a heart attack right now, you are not the kind of doctor who's going to be able to help me, right? Other than to call 911.
Well, I might give you a resuscitation.
I could only hope for that, Dr. White. But you're not a medical doctor. Is that true?
No, I have a PhD from Tulane University in Spanish.
And you taught Spanish for many years. Is that right?
For over 25 years, yes, at Xavier University. And the only class that I teach now at Xavier is African American music. But I provide every semester different programs that deal with certain aspects of New Orleans music and culture. And then I do a lot of writing, lecturing, and trying to promote the city and the city's culture and heritage.
Ah, I see. So when you say that you teach African-American music, are we talking about music that begins in Africa and ends up somewhere with Lil Wayne, or are we thinking about African-American music within a more specific confine?
Well, actually, there are two parts to the course. The first semester starts in Africa and ends up with the birth of jazz in the diaspora and changes in New York. The second semester ends up with hip-hop. And yes, Lil Wayne. You know, I'm always talking about how important New Orleans is in music, so it's nice to have people that you can kind of pull out of the woodwork in every style of music, just about, you know, from classical music on through hip-hop. So not just jazz.
That's pretty wonderful, though. But the thing is, I'm glad, actually, that you're here because I get to hear you play. But also, because you are a teacher, I feel like I want to bring all of my musical ailments to you, and then hopefully you can help me sort them out, okay?
Okay.
So, doctor, you know, the thing is, I find it very difficult, and maybe others do too, or, you know, but I find it very difficult to explain the melody of many a traditional jazz song, you know, because so much is happening all at once. In a way, I feel like I've just entered into a very noisy party, and then I have to suddenly explain to somebody what happened. You know? So why is, I mean, is that a common, you know, feeling among music lovers?
When you hear real authentic New Orleans jazz, it is like a conversation, but it also feels like one thing coming at you.
Yes, like a wave.
Like a wave, yes. And it's very powerful and it's very spiritual. But the secret is it is very, very difficult to play. Because it
That's
consists,
not a good secret.
Well, it consists of the total of many simple parts that are blended together. And the secret is how you blend the parts together. It's not how many notes you play. I mean, the object is not to play as many notes as you can, which okay. is what some people try to do. They think, you know, you're playing jazz, everybody just does their own thing. But really, in New Orleans jazz, authentic New Orleans jazz, you're consciously creating together, sort of like a team.
Yeah.
You know, I always compare it these days to football or basketball. Each instrument has a role.
But let me ask you this. When I think about a song like Wild Man Blues, for instance, which is one of the most popular songs in the traditional jazz pantheon, and, you know, everyone has recorded it. Jelly Roll Morton, obviously, Louis Armstrong has Hot 5, Hot 7. You know, you've recorded it as well. And yet I can't hum it. I mean, I know it when I hear it, but I can't hum it. Can you hum Wild Man Blues?
Well, I'm a bad hummer, but...
You're a humdinger.
Oh.
Melodies do not, they're not simple melodies, you know, like Happy Birthday simple. I mean, they are embellished.
Well, yes, you embellish a little here and there, depending on how you feel today, depending on what the weather is like, what you had to eat, you know, who you've been talking to, you know, what mood you're in. So you can play a melody like that and vary it many kinds of ways. Like, for example, I've played Wild Man Blues many times.
Yes.
Based on what I'm feeling at the moment.
like the way you feel, Dr. White.
But, you know, it depends on what the other musicians give you, the cues that they give you, the feel that they have, their spirit. And if you can sometimes lock into that spirit or the rhythm, that gives you ideas instantly. Trumpet generally plays the melody or the lead.
Right.
And most of those songs leave little spaces. And those spaces are where rhythm can happen or responses can happen. This is an old folk song that was actually adopted by New Orleans musicians and played from the earliest days of jazz. It's called Careless Love.
I love Careless Love.
So when you play that melody, and you hold that note out, that almost calls for a response. You could go. So the response can take on different forms. It's like you're having a conversation.
Yeah.
Like, this is your note, okay?
Okay.
So you sing that, and you're the trumpet, right? And
yeah.
I'm responding. Go ahead.
Love, oh love, oh careless love. Wow, you can make anybody sound good.
Yeah, except me.
I love that. Well, let me ask you this. Now, you have always been associated with what many have called the purest form of traditional jazz. But does that make you feel like you're in mothballs at all?
Well, you know, that's a good question and a good challenge, not only for playing traditional jazz, but maintaining any cultural tradition. How do you carry on the heritage and the spirit of a tradition, yet add something new, different, or make it relevant or pertinent to contemporary times?
Right.
Well, there's no one answer to that. I remember a few years ago, we were playing a party. We played a few songs, and then I told them about some chord changes. Play this, 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 and this. And they played, and then I started playing this melody. And nobody knew what it was except one of the musicians, and he looked, and I could see he was trying to hear what it was, and he couldn't quite figure it out because it sounded like traditional New Orleans jazz.
And yet?
And yet it was a song from 50 Cent.
The rapper, 50 Cent?
Yes, that's correct.
Oh, boy. Do you remember the name of the song?
Well, the song, as I recall it, was P-I-M-P.
P-I-M-P.
I don't know what you heard about me. Put a can't get a dollar out of me. No Cadillac, no perms you can't see. Then I'm a P-I-M-P.
The music that's playing behind him has a melody that has a structure that's similar to some of the songs in traditional jazz. So I just took that little melody and did a song out of it.
Come get money with me if you're curious to see how it feels to be with a P-I-M-P rolling the pins with me. You can watch the TV from the back seat of my V. I'm a P-I-M-P. Girl, we could pop some champagne and we could have a ball. We could toast to the good. Till I got a bit confused. She got on pay less.
I'm shopping for the chillers in the summer, the cheaper. Man, it's all you can have, but when I'm done, I ain't gonna keep them. Come and go, hey, pippin' up. This ain't a secret, you ain't gotta keep it on the low. Choose on me, I ain't strippin' in the street. Put my heart up, then you get your feet. Now lick my bottom, you always come up with my bread. The last, she was whipping stitches in her head. Get your heart out of pocket, I put a charge on the. Cause I need 4 TVs and AMGs for the 6. Make a pit rich, I ain't paying. Catch a date.
I don't know what you heard about me. Put up, can't get a dollar out of me. No Cadillac, no birds, you can't see. Then I'm a B.I.M.B. I don't know what you heard about me. Put up, can't get a dollar out of me.
Like show business. In the hood, they say there's no business like business. You know, it's time to move back. You know,
full playlist of our show with Dr. Michael White, go to our website at musicinsideout.org or find us on Facebook and Twitter. Stay tuned for more after the break. It's Music Inside Out. I'm Gwen Tompkins. A clarinet dresses up any occasion, and today, we are in top hat and coattails talking with Dr. Michael White. Here he is with Give It Up, Gypsy's Second Line. Why? Well, why the heck not?
Thank you.
clarinetist Dr. Michael White is with us. So now we're going to talk about tone. This is the first thing that people notice. It is your handshake, I would imagine, as a clarinet player.
I was very fortunate when I was younger to have extensive contact with early generation musicians. And the first thing that they all said, and the thing that they emphasized the most, is tone. You have to develop a beautiful, unique, personal tone, because that represents you, your spirit, your voice, and that's something that you can be proud of.
There are stories of people who burn their reeds a little bit to make them harder so they can sound a certain way, or, you know, or they play with like a double-lipped, is that embouchure?
Embouchure. Embouchure en français, oui.
Exactly. You know what I mean? To sound a certain way.
I have a very special clarinet that I've had for a few months.
It's beautiful. It's the color of Tupelo honey. I mean, it's really gorgeous.
Yes, it's a one of a kind. It's made out of an African hardwood mopani that comes from Tanzania.
Mm.
But the guy that made the instrument, it's a German clarinet maker, Joachim Sojilka, makes his own reeds. Mm. So I love them, and I've been trying them ever since. I'm not even sure what size they are or how they compare to other reeds. He has three plus on there. But every manufacturer's three is different.
What does the number mean?
Well, the number is the size, meaning okay. The higher the number, the harder the reed. The harder reeds give you the false perception of having a bigger sound.
And yes.
That's what you want, to have a big sound. But it also becomes a lot harder to control. And it is a soprano instrument, but you have to be able to bend notes, and you have to have a tone and a sound that, you know, that sounds like you're representing yourself. And of course, most jazz clarinetists in history were men. You don't want to have a weak, thin tone. You want to have a expressive,
manly tone,
macho
full
tone.
Of chromosomes. And
there you go.
Okay, so I'm going to ask you if you don't mind playing the opening to Petite Fleur. Do you remember that song?
Yeah, I think I can play a couple of notes.
Is gorgeous, that tone. It makes you want to reach for some bourbon and let it just swish around in your mouth for a while, you know, before you swallow. I mean, that is gorgeous.
Thank you. I've been working on that all my life.
You have, of course, studied all of the great clarinet players. One fellow actually said in the liner notes to an album, I was at Preservation Hall one day, and I could have sworn that I heard Johnny Dodds playing, you know, and lo and behold, it was not Johnny Dodds. He had been dead for many, many years, and it was Dr. Michael White.
I listened to Johnny Dodds' recordings.
Right.
I listened to Sidney Bechet. I listened to George Lewis. I listened to Edmund Hall. I listened to old man Simeon, Barney Bigard, and so many others.
Mm-hmm.
And I was very impressed by some of the sounds. I mean, Johnny Dodds was a master of blues playing.
Right, and this is a fella who played, of course, with Louis Armstrong, played with King Oliver, actually, before playing in the Hot 5 and the Hot 7 with Armstrong. Is that right? And then led his own.
Yeah, he led Johnny Dodds' Black Bottom Stompers, but he was very popular in Chicago. He led his own bands. He played with a lot of different people.
Played with Jelly Roll Morton, too, huh?
Played with Jelly Roll Morton, some backed-up blues singers. He was, some of the older people said, before he left New Orleans, he was the most popular clarinet player in New Orleans.
So give us a Dodgsian flourish,
oh, let's
if
see.
You will.
A lot of early clarinetists use, to different degree, that wavy motion that you hear in a lot of singers.
Yeah.
Vibrato. Sidney Bechet, in particular, was known for having a very wide vibrato, meaning that he had a lot of spaces in between. So it was...
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, Bechet, when he played songs, especially solos where he played several choruses, he has a lot of poetry, a lot of drama, a lot of highs and lows. So he's really telling a story. He builds it up slowly from that very bottom of the instrument.
Mm-hmm.
And he finally ends up with a climax. I mean, he just lets it rip. He gets to the top of the mountain and he just lets it go.
Mm.
And then he brings it back down.
Like an epic.
It is. So, you know, that's one of the reasons Sidney Bechet had a hit record in 1939
mm-hmm.
off of Summertime. I mean, it was just incredible.
Thank you.
Now, George Lewis had a beautiful sound. His sound was a little lighter and a little sweeter than Sidney Bechet or Johnny Dodds. But nonetheless, it was very powerful. He would use that song, that sound, the swing in the upper register. He conveyed sort of the feeling of dancing over the notes. In the lower register, he also had a beautiful tone. When he played popular songs like blues songs or songs like Just a Closer Walk with Thee, you could hear the way his tone would just ring.
Well, there's a story that when you heard George Lewis's version of Burgundy Street Blues, that changed something in you and made you commit more strongly to the clarinet. Is that true?
Well, what happened was I was playing with Doc Pawlin's band, and I played a church parade, which just so happened to be at Mahalia Jackson's old church.
Is that Mount Moriah?
Mount Moriah.
Baptist Church.
Yes, Baptist Church up on Millidon Street near the river uptown in the section known as Black Pearl. And, I guess the spirit was strong that day. After the parade, I went to a record store, and I saw this record, George Lewis. And I said, well, I haven't heard a lot of things about it. I've heard the name a few times, but nobody seemed to be that knocked out by that name.
Is this in the 70s?
This would have been about 1977.
Okay, and Lewis had been dead for some years.
Yes, he died like on the last day of 1969, I believe.
Okay.
68. And I went home and I put on this record. And from the first note, it was like my whole life had been darkness, and all of a sudden a light came on.
Thank you.
That's Burgundy Street Blues with George Lewis on clarinet. When we come back, Dr. Michael White has more to say about why the song changed his life. Stay with us. This is Music Inside Out. I'm Gwen Tompkins. We're hearing Dr. Michael White and his mighty clarinet play Burgundy Street Blues. Dr. White grew up in Uptown New Orleans, the son of a letter carrier and a homemaker. White says he didn't commit fully to the clarinet until he heard traditional jazz great George Lewis play on a rare recording. Lewis's version of Burgundy Street Blues changed White's life, and we want to know why.
It just opened up and expressed what it felt like to be from New Orleans. It was like all of the things that are unique and special about New Orleans life and living, the way people laugh, gumbo, the smell of the cut grass and flowers in the spring by City Park, the bayou, the river, being around the French Quarter, going to fish fries and penny parties, having people sit out on their stoop, learning your news from them, going to local restaurants and meeting strangers, all of those things that are very unique about the city. It seems like all of those things were in the music. And it seemed to be historic, but at the same time, timeless. And I guess what that really was, as I look back on it, it was that it transmitted a spirit.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the real spirit of New Orleans and the real spirit of the people of New Orleans and the people that created this music.
That's a lot. That's a lot of weight to put on one song, isn't it?
Well, you know, I'm not the only person. I mean, there are other people that, you know, that song, they say it changed their lives in one way or another. I've heard that all over the world. It's a magic song, I have to tell you.
Traditional jazz is sort of an odd choice for a guy coming up in the 70s and 80s in anywhere in America. I mean, the 70s and 80s were about Earth, Wind, and Fire and Fleetwood Mac and
Chicago,
and even Miles Davis in the 80s was walking around in gold lamé playing Michael Jackson songs,
right.
You know, and all. So, you know, how did this idea of traditional jazz fly with you? I mean, you must have been a very odd duck.
That's a good way of putting it. You know, I've often thought about that because it almost defies logic that I would be that much into the music. It was never a choice. I did not have a day when I consciously said, I want to play traditional music. I think it was a spiritual and a divine thing. I believe that that was something that was given to me and was for me. It just took me a long time to see it. I tried to be everything else. I never aspired to be a musician. But there was no escape.
What else do you listen to, though?
My musical tastes are very wide, and people would be surprised to know, but I listen to every style of jazz, including avant-garde free jazz. Mm-hmm. I mean, I love John Coltrane, Albert Ayler, and those kind of guys. But I also listen to pop music.
Like what?
Oh, let's see. Everything from Alicia Keys to Beyonce to...
What's a song that's your guilty pleasure? We all have one, if not 100.
I can't say that on air.
Yes, you can. No, I'll tell you mine if you tell me yours.
That's a song. Tell me your dream.
That's right. You recorded that song.
That's right.
You sure did.
Right.
It's a nice song.
I recently got into, and I guess I'm a few years late with that, but I recently got into Amy Winehouse.
Yes, she was sort of a modern day blues singer, really.
I would consider her now an influence because I like the way she expressed lyrics. I like the way she used the tone of her voice, and I like the way she used rhythm. She does so in sometimes like a jazz musician.
I mean, she had a voice that was, I would think, is very much like that Burgundy Street Blues song that you're talking about. It seemed to carry within it all of her life.
Well, sometimes I go out by myself and I look across the water. And I think of all the things, what you're doing. And in my head, I paint a picture. Since I come home, well, my body's been a mess. And I miss your ginger hair and the way you like to dress. I want you to come on over. Stop making a fool out of me. Why don't you come on over?
I might, in the course of one evening, I might listen to, seriously, classical music, rap, Amy Winehouse, Sidney Bechet, George Lewis. As a musician, the one thing that I'm trying to find and look for is truth. And when I listen, if I had to describe the one thing that links Armstrong, Bechet, Dodds, Lewis, Morton, Amy Winehouse, Billie Holiday, it's truth. It's truth. Whatever that means, it's truth. So that's what I'm looking for. And if I can convey that, then I'm in the ballpark.
Do you want to talk about the stuff you lost in Katrina?
Well, not particularly, but you know, I had amassed a very, very large collection.
Yeah, I heard like 5,000 records.
Yeah, I had CDs, LPs, I had old 78s. I had quite a lot of CDs. I had over 5,000 CDs alone. Mm. I had over 4,000 books. A lot of those things had to do with jazz.
Didn't you have a mouthpiece of Sidney Bechet's?
Yeah, the classic white mouthpiece that you see in some pictures of Bechet. It was given to me by his best-known student, Bob Wilbur. I had a mouthpiece that belonged to Jabbo Smith, Louis Armstrong's number one trumpet rival. I had every film that Louis Armstrong was ever in.
Oh, boy, and he made them all great, didn't he?
Yes, every film that Sidney Bechet was ever in.
Oh, boy.
And I had a lot of other rare film footage with jazz bands. And I had so much stuff, but I also had a collection of vintage instruments, vintage clarinets. Some of them go back as far as the late 1800s. And I rounded off to about 50, but there were more than that, many more than that.
Were you able to salvage anything?
Myself. I took some of my valuable instruments with me when I evacuated, but everything that was in my house was destroyed.
So you had the makings of a national, if not international, archive.
Well, you know,
is what you had.
Even though I never thought about being a collector, or I would put things on loan to museums.
But you know, you wrote an album called Blue Crescent, which is a beautiful album, actually. And it from what I understand, it sort of stemmed from a hiatus you took in the woods, in which you wrote 36 songs from scratch and recorded several of them for the album.
Yes.
So from loss came this incredible creativity.
Well, you know, the lesson is taught to us by the jazz funeral. It teaches us to mourn loss and to expect a glorious transference of existence. Just that in this case, that transference of existence was here on earth. With death can come rebirth. And I hadn't really thought about that because I lost so much. You know, I did realize early in the game that life as I knew it ended. That was it. Things would never be the same. But what I didn't count on is that, you know, that next life could be really great. So in a sense, I feel like a kid. I still think traditional New Orleans jazz is one of the great world musics, and I will always play it. But I've also explored other musical genres that are kind of surprising. You know, I've had the chance to record with musicians that were well outside of the traditional genre. I recorded in the last couple of years with people like Taj Mahal and Eric Clapton and Paul Simon. I love music. I love all kinds of music. And I think that's the thing that saved me is that faith in God and music.
Thank you. Thank you so much for talking with us, Dr. Michael White.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
You've been listening to Music Inside Out from WWNO. Our show is produced by Lynette Johnson, Sean Collins, and Jason Rhine. Our theme song was composed and performed by James Booker. Ron Biava is the station's marketing and development manager, and the general manager of WWNO is Paul Mawson. Look for us on Facebook and Twitter. I'm Gwen Tompkins, and this is Music Inside Out.
Music Inside Out is underwritten by the Historic New Orleans Collection, the New Orleans Jazz and Heritage Foundation, and WWNO. For more information on how you can support our program, go to our website at musicinsideout.org/support.